Okay, so we're going to have so today we're going to talk about a little bit about probabilistic plan recognition and mainly about that first paper, the decision theoretic assistance, because turns out that it gives me it's a more general view of plan recognition, as those of you who read know that what's the point in just recognizing? You know, how do you show that you recognized what I'm doing? Okay, I mean, in fact, until I gave you this, you could have said I've understood the paper. It's just the business of showing, writing up our insights, that's putting a crimp on our, you know, style. So the question is, how do we know that somebody recognized? It's because, you know, they probably use the recognition to do something. And one thing that you could do, as I said, is assistance. And so, in fact, that paper actually talks about the whole thing together, recognition as well as assisting the user, you know, in doing something. Plus, it gives us my last chance to talk a little about PomDPs, which I did not talk about, because that paper actually does have a very special case, partially observable Markov-Eisen processes. These are, you know, in fact, they don't look at the classical methods for it, but it's a much simpler way of looking at it. So that's what we'll do today. And then after that, the plan recognition aspect would be over for the semester. Tomorrow at 11 o'clock is a talk by Biplav Srivastava, which would be quite relevant to this class. Basically, he's going to look at web service composition and whether or not planning has a connection to it. Okay, I understand that it's outside of the class time. I encourage you to show up, but you know, if you have some major things and you can't make out, that's fine. Okay, I mean, it's not fine, but you know, I can't do anything. And then on Thursday, inside in the class, there is going to be a talk on how Xerox PARC is using some of the techniques that you have been looking at in doing various. I mean, it's like a different, very different kind of a planning application where they're considering a printer path. So, you know, in all these big printers, you know, high volume printers, the papers take different paths through the copier to come out. And so what they're talking about is online planning of the path of the paper. And if there's a jam, then very quickly replan and then change the path, okay? So they're going to actually, Mindo, who's working at PARC, is going to come and give a talk on that. Okay, so those would give me, I guess, two specific applications. I mean, you could talk about, in general, you know, various places things are being used, NASA planning is being used, all that stuff, but these are two people. And so you can have, if you have specific questions that are not related to the talk, you could still talk about it on next Thursday, basically, when Min would be here for the whole class. So he might talk for like the first 40 minutes or something, and then you could have other questions too. And then the last class, 429, is sort of an interactive review. We'll try to figure out what we did the entire semester. Normally, what I do is I'll show the list of topics and then expect us to collectively figure out what we did. Okay, so that would be, again, something where you will try to go back and remember what you did and what are the connections and all that stuff. Okay, I'll try to send you some structure on that, you know, before that class. So that's the rest of the time. Okay, so are there any questions before I start? Okay. So we were talking about plan recognition, the problem, and we also looked at essentially two classes of approaches. I mean, we talked about the fact that there could be two classes of approaches. One is, in general, plan recognition is a classic instance of what's called abduction. That is going to the causes from the symptoms, okay? So you're doing this. So all I'm seeing is you have some goals with respect to which you're doing some plans, and those actions are having effects on the world, and all I am getting is essentially some partial information about the state of the world. Okay, based on that, I'm trying to figure out what's causing this at different levels. What's causing it in terms of what action got done, and what's causing those actions in terms of what goals are you trying to achieve? Okay, so abduction, you know, so the from a classical logic point of view, right? If you have a P implies Q, P is true, you get to say Q is true. Okay. If P implies Q, Q is true, can you get to say P is true? That's the issue in abduction. What are the causes that could have made Q true? And in general, obviously, in the consistency-based approaches, what you're talking about is what are all the plans that could have theoretically caused Q. So for example, again, going back to this kind of example, suppose if there are like five guys who could cause Q, P implies Q, R and M imply Q, J imply Q. Okay, and so now I see Q, so clearly I can say either P is true, or R and M are true, or J is true, all of them. And there are many other things which don't imply Q, right? So essentially you have at least this. This is sort of, these are things that are consistent with what you have seen, you know, that, and in particular, normally, if you're looking at it in a deterministic sense, what you're looking for is the minimal set of explanation. You know, what are all the things that can potentially explain Q? And in the consistency-based approaches, you're looking for all the plans that can explain the actions that you're doing. Okay. Again, remember that plans and goals, and so because, as we discussed last time, in plan recognition, you have to assume that there are only a certain set of goals that the user the agent is potentially going in pursuit of. Because if you don't say that, then essentially whatever sequence of actions that the agent does, that is a plan. Okay, for what? We have no idea, because everything leads to some state, and if every state is a potential goal state, then essentially you have nothing about recognizing what people are doing. Okay, so you have to assume that only a subset of, you know, this only a subset of the world state that really could be goal state. Okay, it makes sense that that's the only reason to, you know, do plan recognition. Anyway, so we looked at the consistency based approaches, which is very quickly figuring out essentially this minimal set, you know, that would all be consistent with the observations you have made. Okay, and in particular, one version that we looked at a little bit more in detail was that graph plan guy, which essentially set up all the goals that are consistent with all the states that have been observed. Okay, if you remember, I don't quite know that I have this here, but basically, if I see the actions that are being that are being done by the agent, and I know the initial state, so now after this action I know the next state, after that I know the next state, and so on. And given the set of potential goals that the agent might be pursuing, then I can check with respect to each of the states whether what are all the possible goals that are satisfied in those states. And any goal that is satisfied in a state is a potential goal. Except if a goal is satisfied in the first state, then why am I doing five more actions? Then it can't just be the goal that I'm interested in making, true. So you make this whole idea of minimal relevance, in the sense that every action should either be supporting the goal that you say the agent is pursuing, or is supporting some other effect which supports some action which then supports this goal. Okay, and so all you wind up doing there is figuring out the minimal set of goals that are relevant, that are actually consistent with the actions that you're seeing. Okay, now of course, abduction problem. This is part of abduction, figuring out at least what are all the things that can potentially explain what's going on. But oftentimes, what you're more interested in doing is there are too many possible goals that the user might be pursuing with respect to which the following observations could have happened. What I want to know is, what are the most likely goals? What is the single most likely goal that user might be pursuing? Okay, remember I talked about this last time too, as to how important it is to pick exactly one goal versus just saying all these are relevant to you. Depends on the actual context. Okay, so if you are in fact going to do something pretty drastic based on what you recognize is the goal of the user, okay, then you probably want to know what's the single most likely goal. If on the other hand, what you're going to do is prefetch all the work that the user might need in doing the rest of the actions in pursuit of their goal that you recognized. And if you're not sure which goal, then there's G1, there's G2, there's G3. For G1, these are all the potential actions you would do. G2, you'll do these actions. G3, you'll do these actions. I'll get you to do all of them easily. I'll prefetch all the information for all of them. Okay. But either way, in this, the point is that in the probabilistic scenarios, you would start talking about the most likely set of goals that the user might be focusing on. Okay. One other approach that I looked at in consistency-based approaches, in fact, I mentioned last time, was if you have a bunch of HTM schemas, then you can try to parse the sequence of actions you have seen in terms of the HTM schemas, and all the parses will tell you the top-level goals that you might be actually achieving. Okay. Having said that, and in fact, there the HTM schemas are becoming sort of a grammar of solutions. Okay. Now, the way we used it before as well as last class was either it's parsed or it's not parsed. Okay. But what if different HTM schemas have different weights in terms of how likely are those schemas going to be used for a particular goal? Okay, by users. Okay. So then what you would have in essence is each HTTP schema, just instead of being just a normal grammar rule, however baroque it might be, it will now be a stochastic grammar rule. Each grammar rule with a weight, saying this is the likelihood that this grammar rule is what you might use. Okay, so for example, here is a scenario where you have a bunch of rewrite rules and there are different probabilities for each of those rules. Now, the issue would then be not just finding a parse tree, but finding the most probable parse tree. Okay, and so it would be, obviously, for each parse tree, you can compute the weight, the probability weight of that parse tree. Assuming all of these numbers are independent, you just multiply all the rewrite rules that were used. Okay, and then you are essentially asking what is the most likely parse tree. Yes, sir.
Is it okay to just say that everything is independent? Because I wouldn't say that, especially in like games, like all these rules are independent to each other.
So the point is when you start having grammars, there is this question of this one is actually a context independent, context free grammar. Mm-hmm. And they also have context dependent grammars. And the parsing becomes harder versus easier based on the kind of grammars you have. In fact, I'm sort of using a metaphorical language and I'm saying HTMs can be thought of as grammar rules, but HTMs are not this kind of simple grammar rules. They're significantly more complex grammar rules. Okay. The only thing that I can say, again, every topic here can be a separate course. In fact, there is an entire plan recognition course that is taught in some schools, okay, for an entire semester at advanced graduate level. All I'm trying to do is get you what are all the possible approaches, and if you got interested, you have to read a lot more. Okay, so you could think in terms of parsing and most likely parses. Okay, so it's weighted parsing essentially. And then here is another approach also. I mean, so there's like a bunch of approaches for plan recognition as parsing. Here is one which is again doing it in the context of traffic. So you are essentially seeing, based on the weaving patterns of a car, you're trying to figure out what exactly might they be trying to accomplish. Okay, so you're trying to parse their weaving pattern. Okay, and these are the If you are driving, then you may make a right and then drive, or you might pass and then drive. You might drive, just exit. You might, and if you are passing, then you may make a left and right, and so on. Okay, these are all the various behaviors that you could do in the traffic world. And then you're trying to figure out what is the most likely explanation for a sequence of interleaving actions you know some guy did. Okay. So again, that too looks at it as a parsing problem. There is a whole bunch of approaches. So now, in both this as well as this, if you essentially have a library of plans, if you have a library of plans, normally means like HTN schemas. Okay, what you are trying to do then is to convert that into some sort of a grammar, and then you are trying to look at the sequence of actions that you saw the agent do, you saw the user do, and trying to recognize what might be the most likely plan in the library that you're doing. Okay, there is, in general, all of this, in fact, this parsing idea also winds up being like a more, a sort of a special case of a more general idea, which is that, in essence, when you're looking at somebody doing actions, and you're getting partial observations about their actions as well as the way the states are changing, essentially, you are watching a dynamic Bayes network in action. Okay. So the idea is that you have, if you have a sequential process, okay, and Markov relation processes are sequential processes. The difference is in Markov relation process, the agent has a control as to how the model would evolve, has some control over how the model will evolve. Okay, in plan recognition, what I'm seeing is somebody has a MDP and they're following their policy. Okay, so I'm getting, if it's a fully observable world for me, okay, then I would be exactly seeing the states that they're passing through. Okay, if they're particularly nice to me, they might also tell me the actions they did and the states they went through. Normally, you only get the states that they're passing through, and if you have a stochastic action, then that's not enough to tell which action is the one that you may have actually done. Okay. And then if in fact the world is partially observable, so in fact even if the world is fully observable in terms of its states, I still don't know the action that the agent did unless the agent specifies it. Okay, I'm about to do this action and then I did it now. And then I get to see what happens to the world. Okay, but if the state is in fact partially observable, then essentially what you're seeing is that you're getting just an evidence on the actual internal state. The state could be a combination of the action that the user did and the actual state of the world that you both are in. Okay, now you can set up these kinds of processes essentially, you know, as dynamic Bayes networks. And an example of those, so for example, so let's sort of, what I'm trying to do is for the next several methods, mostly use HMMs and generalized dynamic Bayes networks. What I want to do is try to give you a feel for why they are connected to plan recognition. Okay, so in a dynamic Bayes network, basically you have the same, you know, the last time you looked at dynamic Bayes networks in this class is when we talked about observing, modeling actions. Okay, you model an action in terms of the variables before the action, variables after the action. And if you provide the conditional probabilities and how the variables before the actions affect the variables after the action, okay, then you have observed, then you have specified one single action. Okay, now what else you can do is, so for example, so that much you already know. So if P is true, Q is true, then whether or not P will remain true in the next level depends on what was the value of P and what was the value of Q. Okay, and then also there is also R, which is dependent on just Q. That's what this particular dynamic Bayes network is saying. Okay, this entire Bayes network is, let's say, for an action A. Now, if I do a different action, I will get another Bayes network that corresponds to that. What I could do is, if I have one, you know, three actions, A1, A2, or A3 that I can do, I will throw in one more random variable called A. Okay, which also affects these conditional probabilities. So depending on the specific action you wound up picking, okay, P winds the, all you need, of course, is what is the distribution of these variables in the next level, given their distribution in the previous level, right? And as far as the agent who is actually working in the world, A is not a random variable, it's a choice variable. But for me, it's a random variable. Somebody is picking it. Okay? So, in essence, if I throw in that action as part of the dynamic Bayes network, then what I have is a bunch of variables evolving from ith level to I plus 1th level. In general, dynamic Bayes networks can connect the same variable at different time slices. Okay? If it's a first order Markov dynamic Bayes network, then it will connect ith slice variables to I plus 1 slice variables. Okay? If it's second order, it has to connect, you know, I and I plus 1 to I plus 2. Okay? We'll assume first order. Okay? So in fact, the simplest kind of simplest kind of dynamic Bayes network, which is of interest in many, many places, is a hidden Markov model. Okay, so basically, here is a scenario. I have rain. So this is basically a process where this particular, in looking at this network, think of the following thing. Somebody is sitting inside some nuclear reactor underground. Okay, they can't tell whether or not it's raining outside. They have no idea. All they know is when their coworkers come in, they can see whether they got their umbrellas that day. If they got an umbrella, they tend to think maybe it's raining. Of course, there are some coworkers who just don't like sun and they put an umbrella for the sun too. So maybe maybe they just picked up the umbrella and to avoid the sun, or they just picked it up for some other reason. Okay, so the interesting point, of course, is whenever you have a dynamic Bayes network like this, in this particular case, I have rain 1, umbrella 1 being connected to rain 2, umbrella 2, and so on. Okay, the interesting part is these are all random variables. Some of them are actually directly observable. The umbrella is directly observable. It will be part of the evidence. Okay. Some others are not observable. Rain is not observable for this poor guy. So from a plan recognition point of view, this is an action variable. This is not observable. If it's a fully observable world otherwise, then you can observe every other part of the state, but not the action variable. Okay. And then based on a bunch of these observations, what you're trying to find in a hidden Markov model is what's the most likely sequence of states that would have caused this particular set of observations. Okay, and so this is how HMMs are connected to plan recognition. So for example, HMM one, how many of you have heard of hidden Markov models? Okay, so a lot of you heard of it in various times. Another place where you may have heard of hidden Markov models, for example, is they're very useful in doing speech recognition. Okay, but I would say speech recognition is plan recognition in some level, at some level. So I am trying to say a certain thing. So in fact, yesterday we had a great talk by a professor from Germany, and I'm trying to talk like him, Germany, who converts every sa into a z. Okay, so he was thinking that he was saying, I will say this now, I will say this now. I will see this now. And I'm used to Indian and Chinese accents. You know, there is no American accent. None of you really count. I mean, it's only Indian or Chinese accent that's majority in the school, and suddenly this German guy comes up, and I had a hard time recognizing what it was trying to say. Based on what I'm hearing from his, you know, his phoneme that I'm hearing, I had to figure out what he was actually saying. Okay, so his intent was to say the phoneme s, but then I hear something called z. It could be because he didn't know how to say it, or it could be because my ears have gone wrong. Okay, either way, based on bunch of these, you know, observations that I'm hearing, that, you know, I'm trying to make the most likely estimation of the sequence of phonemes that he tried to say. And we do this all the time, you know. It almost sounded like he was trying to say this, but it couldn't make sense given the rest of the phonemes, so maybe he said this other thing. Okay, that's exactly what happens in plan recognition too. As you start getting inputs, observations about the partial state of the world, in the beginning it looks like maybe they are in trying to go towards this goal, maybe they're trying to go towards this other goal, but as you get more and more observations, you can be more sure as to which goal they're likely to be going towards. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And you go one by one there and do some transformations from the base.
Yeah. No, but so the point is, yeah, go ahead.
You
yeah.
never get back.
You never get back meaning what?
Like, when you're recognizing something, you just recognize it, and even if it's wrong recognition, you never really get back to it.
Well, that's a different story. I mean, that could be true for plan recognition too.
No.
That's true for plan recognition too. So the question, of course, is, in fact, part of what I'm trying to make connections to is, if you have some, if you know something about hidden Markov models for whatever reason, pretty much all of it transfers over to plan recognition. It's sort of a very related problem. Okay, so in particular, in fact, there are I need a separate slide. Let me get you one thing. Whenever you have okay, good. Go back again. So, you know, I mean, in a dynamic Bayes network, all you're doing is you're just trying to provide the connection between one level, one slice to the next slice. Okay. In if you, on top of it, if you say that certain variables are observable, certain variables are not observable, you get to talk about how you go from this state to this state. Is the transition model, the action model. And if this is your real state, how, you know, this particular sensing observation would be, you know, how likely that umbrella will happen if it is actually raining that day, is the sensory model. Okay? So because not every day when it's raining you would actually see an umbrella. And neither is it the case that if it's not raining there won't be an umbrella. Okay? So you would wind up having, this is the transition model, this is your sensor model, but from a normal Bayes network point of view, these are just CPTs. You know, if you give a Bayes network, for every node, you need a conditional probability of that node given all its immediate parents. In this little guy, this guy's immediate parent is this guy, and this guy's immediate parent is this guy. Okay, and the only big deal that we're making is that if I give you this and this, then if I want to construct, unfold it to one more level, I'll get the same exact probabilities repeated. So I don't need to say that, you know, how the, if it's a stationary process, then rain and at the ith instance causing rain at the I plus one instance is the same as rain at I plus one instance causing rain at I plus two instance. Okay. Fine. So this is both a dynamic Bayes network and a hidden Markov model. Okay, that's just the normal terminology. Now, in general, in dynamic Bayes networks, the kinds of problems that you're interested in solving—this is again from the Bayes networks point of view—the kinds of problems that you're solving are, they're all general Bayes network issues. You know, what is the general Bayes network issue? You'll give evidence on certain set of variables, and you'll ask what is the posterior on certain other set of variables. That's the usual questions that you ask on Bayes networks. Okay, in dynamic Bayes networks, the specific versions of that will become interesting. Things like filtering, which is having seen the evidence up until the teeth instance, what is the most likely state at the teeth time point? Okay, so not just, you know, based on all the evidences that you got over all the days, okay, whether you know, first day umbrella, second day no umbrella, third day umbrella, fourth day no umbrella, and so on and so forth, and then today it's 10th day umbrella, given the sequence of observations, what is the posterior on whether or not it's raining today? Posterior distribution would be rain 0.7, no rain 0.3, for example, because it's a Boolean variable. Okay, that's filtering. So basically filtering is taking all the evidence and computing the posterior on the state. Okay, prediction is, given the evidence up until now, figuring out the posterior not just of current state but also later states. Okay, smoothing is, given the evidence up until today, refiguring out what actually happened 10 days back. Okay, so that happens a lot of time. In fact, history is always rewritten, you know, after the entire problem is, I mean, because you get partial information about a sequential process, after 3-4 years you will actually know what happened. Okay, so you basically, these are all the same exact given evidence asking posterior probability, except if it is for the posterior probability for the particular time point, it's called filtering. If it is for the later time point, it's called prediction. If it is for the former time points, then it's called smoothing. Okay, now, and then finally, most likely explanation is, given all the evidence until now, what is the most likely sequence of states that you went through? Most likely sequence of states that you went through. So this is different from this. This one essentially says, given the evidence for these three umbrellas, what is the most likely state here? Is raining, what's the most likely, I'm sorry, what's the posterior probability? What's the probability that rain is true, and what's the probability that rain is false? Yes?
When we're trying to estimate the probabilities of certain, like, cold being true using Bayesian networks or Hessian schemas, like, so, but can we also use, like, actual generative planning if there's a competing hypothesis, like, okay, either this is the goal or this is the goal? If we assume that the recognizer has access to all the actions of the agent and not just the knowledge of actions performed, you take the hypothesis, this is probably the goal, and come up.
That's exactly what we'll do in the next paper. I mean, the paper, Bayesian theoretic assistance, if you remember, I mean, those of, I don't know whether you read it or not, I mean, I know some people didn't read, some did, but those of you read know that, you know, part of what the assistant can do, because the assistant knows exactly the actions that the boss has, okay, so they can do the planning for the boss and figure out what must have been their optimal policy if they had any sense. Now, of course, bosses never have any sense. They don't do the optimal thing. They would do enough suboptimal thing, but in fact what they'll do is they'll take the optimal plan that somebody who has this goal would be doing, but that still may not be what you're going to do. In fact, this is a very interesting point. So suppose you started doing certain actions. Okay, so you go like this, you go like this, you go like this, and you would think nobody who wants to go there would do these crazy things. Okay, but that is assuming that I'm not crazy. You don't know that I'm going to do, I mean, so when I'm recognizing agent's plan, do I know for sure whether the agent is optimal? No. In fact, agents who are optimal probably don't even need help. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's the people of the world, you know, the bosses who barely know where they put anything, and the Alzheimer's patients who are forgetting a lot of things, they would need a lot more help. And in those cases, they are not, even if they're actually trying to get there, they don't take anything like a straight path. However, what you can do is take the optimal plan as the beginning and then start from there and see what deviations I seem to be making to learn the model for me. Okay? So, I don't know that we can get into enough of the detail in plan recognition, but how planning for you and recognizing your plans are connected is a very interesting issue. I can plan for you, but you won't be following my plan unless you are optimal. Right? Okay. Anyway, the most likely explanation, on the other hand, says what are the states here, such that these would be the observations you would get. Most likely states. Yes.
So pretty much, if I look at them as Markov models, it's kind of a idea. So the first three pretty much discuss probe or computation about certain sequence or path, and the other and the last one is like as the computation about all the paths, right?
I didn't get what you said.
So when you go one slide further.
Further, okay.
You look at the probabilities. So the first three probabilities can be looked at as computation about a single particular sequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but no, notice that the evidence is the same for all of these. Evidence is the same. The question I'm asking is different. Okay, the evidence is I have told you whether or not umbrellas are being used, you know, in the first day, second day, third day, up to the 10th day. That much I told you. Now I'll start asking questions. My first question is, what's the probability distribution that it's raining on the 10th day? That's filtering. Okay, the second question is, what's the probability distribution that it will be raining 5 more days from now? That's on the 15th day. That's prediction. Okay, the third question is, what is the probability distribution that it was actually raining on the 5th day? Remember, it's 10th day. Notice that you do learn more about what actually happened on the 5th day based on what happened afterwards. For example, if it rained on a day, it's likely to rain the next day too. Okay, so in fact, if you also had an umbrella on the 6th day, it's more likely that it actually rained on the 5th day. So that's smoothing. So you actually use the evidence later to make up for the former. The third is, I told you all the observations. At one fell swoop, I want to say, don't give me distributions. Just tell me the most likely explanation for causing these observations. So what must be the actual true-false values of the rain in the 10 days. This is exactly what is done in speech recognition. Given a huge number of phonemes that I heard, that I thought I heard, I'm trying to find what's the most maximum likely sequence of phonemes that you actually said. In fact, if I just ask you what's the most likely thing that you said at the 5th instant, I could have sworn you said z. But if you ask me what's the total word you said, I would say you said. There's no za sound in the said. Because overall, the most likely thing that you could have said that would have caused the observation would not have z. Z is the most likely one for that one particular point, but it winds up being less likely if you consider the joint. Okay? And you know, for those of you who know hidden Markov models, Viterbi algorithm does the maximum MPE estimate, maximum probabilistic, maximum, what's MPE? Most probable explanation. Explanation is what plan recognition is. And anything which does MPE is useful for plan recognition, because when I'm trying to recognize your plan, I'm trying to recognize what's the most likely reason why I observed you doing these actions. Okay? Now, you know, at this point, we can go off into la-la land, talk about a lot of interesting things about how dynamic Bayes networks work and what's the way to do these filtering, prediction, smoothing, and most likely explanation. In particular, most likely explanation, there is an efficient way of doing it for hidden Markov models. That's the Viterbi algorithm. Okay? And then it turns out that even something like filtering can be quite costly, depending upon the model. If you think of hidden Markov model as just a special case of dynamic Bayes networks, and if you're trying to do filtering over normal dynamic Bayes networks, it turns out that it becomes very hard to take the evidence from one level to other level. Okay, and so you would wind up doing what's basically called the likelihood method. Let me see. I won't go into this, but likelihood methods. If you, those of you who remember dynamic Bayes networks, you know that there are sampling-based approaches to compute probabilities. they are not exact, but they are in the Monte Carlo method. Okay, there is a method called likelihood weighting method, and you could use a version of that for dynamic Bayes networks that would be called particle filters. Okay, I won't go into details. I have no time. I don't have the time today to go into details of particle filters. But particle filters, you can think of them as a way of doing Monte Carlo inference, Monte Carlo approaches for inference on dynamic Bayes networks. Okay, and then there is another one that you hear about called the Rao-Blackwellized Monte Carlo, Rao-Blackwellized particle filters. And the idea there is for certain parts of the, let me see if I have that. Okay, so by the way, so there is a specific class of, there's a specific class of HMM models called Kalman filters, which are actually very easy to handle. Okay, they're actually bad from an AI point of view because AI people don't talk about continuous distribution. But Kalman filters essentially are connecting the state at t to state at t plus 1, and of course the observations. Okay, the question in Kalman filters is in a normal Bayes network, dynamic Bayes network, then these are all general conditional probability distributions. In a Kalman filter, these have to be Gaussian distributions. The reason it's interesting is that if it is a Gaussian distribution, then when you filter the evidence, the most likely, the posterior will also be a Gaussian distribution. Gaussians remain Gaussian. That's like a beauty about the distribution there. Okay, so if your approach, you know, if the specific random variable under consideration can be modeled as, the dependencies can be modeled as Gaussian, then you can do Kalman filtering, where the filtering essentially is just analytical. You don't need to do any sampling, and you can just compute. I don't know whether I can show you here. You can compute the, you know, you can always specify the normal distribution by just giving the mu and the mean and the standard deviation. And there is a way of connecting the means and standard deviations of the sensory Gaussian and the transition Gaussian to compute the Gaussian for the posterior. So Kalman filters, people love them. Okay. Rao-Blackwellized filter basically says that suppose you have a bunch of, the problem with the Kalman filters is that many a time, you cannot actually represent the connection between xt and xt plus 1 as a Gaussian. It would only be, so there are times when you would actually, and if you have any other kind of distribution, the problem that would happen is that when you compute the posterior, it won't be in the same form as the previous one. And in particular, the distribution becomes fragmented, such that writing it analytically will wind up taking a lot more space. Not writing it, basically, just representing the, so the thing about Gaussian distribution is you are talking about an infinitely long curve by giving two numbers. Normally, the worst case scenario to give an infinitely long curve is to give infinite number of points. That's the worst case that you hope will never happen to you, but it would happen if it's not a Gaussian. Okay, and what Rao-Blackwellized says is that if there are pieces that are, you know, non-Gaussian and they may be discrete, you can do them with particle filters, and then the other pieces which are dependent on these pieces using Gaussian distribution, you do that using Kalman filters. So you wind up using both of them. Okay, the whole reason this is all connected to us is because ultimately plan recognition may wind up being computing the most likely sequence of states given the observations. Okay, now having said that, class did not end here. Let me show you a couple of examples which may make more sense now. Okay, so here is a piece of work on plan recognition. This is actually the one that was done by the paper pin guys, the Microsoft assistant. Okay, what they did was they set up a dynamic Bayes network corresponding that models the relationship between the user's recent actions and their goals. Okay, and they set up this, they handwrite it. Okay, and then one of the nice things, of course, is if they don't have the CPTs, they can learn it over a period of time. And once you set them up, then the plan recognition would be given the observable variables, what is the most likely, most probable explanation of the rest of the variables. And once you know that, you know what it is the user is trying to do, and then you could try to explain to them what they should be doing. Okay. Okay, that's one example, and that's the reason why suddenly you went from plan recognition to dynamic Bayes networks. Now the question, of course, is how did these dynamic Bayes networks come? If you had access to what the user's actions and the plan libraries, the most reasonable thing to do is to use those plan libraries to set up these dynamic Bayes networks directly. Very few people do that. Instead, what people do is they will they directly set up a limited set of recognition. And so in the sense that you don't consider recognizing everything that the user might be doing. You will consider recognizing low-level primitives of the things that the user might be doing. You set up the entire dynamic Bayes network yourself. Even though if you had the planning library, you could have directly set that up. Okay? And the computational advantage is that you can decide how narrow you want the recognition to be. Okay? And then based on what you recognize, so when you remember that in the last class I said you can do behavior recognition, you can do activity recognition, you can do goal recognition, you can do intention recognition. Now at each level you could do something useful. Okay? If you have plans and goals and the actions, you could do all of them. But then there is this issue of, you know, in fact, the earliest work by Cherniak and Goldman, which is mentioned in the reading that you did on by Ned Blaylock, basically points out that they tried to set up this huge dynamic Bayes network, but they quickly run out of resources. Okay, so instead of solving that, what people do is they make the problem simpler. They'll say, I'll just try to recognize whether you're trying to raise your hand or not raise your hand. That's it. I won't care less. I could care less about what else you're trying to do. Okay? Here is another kind of a scenario. So there, this one was like a paperclip guy who was trying to help the users who are lost in trying to, you know, go through the maze of various menus in the Microsoft Office. And here you have another network, and the interesting thing here is that this can be thought of as essentially based on the lowest level information as to your GPS readings of the person, okay, where they are on the map. Okay, from there you try to compute first the state about the velocity and the position. Because GPS readings can also be, depending on, you know, they can be noisy, depending on what, you know, what kind of sensors you're using, okay? So based on this evidence, you actually try to compute what is the position that you are in, okay? And now, on top of this, once you know the position, you could then try to, there are these higher level variables which talk about, this one is transportation mode. Are you going by bus? Are you walking, for example? Now, one of the interesting things is if your position changed very fast from previous time to next time, you probably aren't walking unless you're a Superman. So I have to assume that you must be going on a bus. Now, notice that if somebody told you that apart from GPS reading, if they also told the recognizer, now I am in the bus, then I don't need this. I would know this directly. If not, then I have to, using the sequence of states I'm going through, I need to figure out the transportation mode. Using the sequence of transportation modes, I need to figure out what trip segment I am in, and what must be the main goal I'm trying to achieve. Okay, Now, this is the work that, this is actually the second paper that, you know, you could have read, but I'm not going to discuss much today, which basically they set up this kind of a, this is a dynamic Bayes network, but you can also think of it as an abstract HMM. Okay, it's a particular kind of dynamic Bayes network where you still have only the lowest level variables can be directly observed. Okay, and based on that, you are essentially trying to figure out the most likely configuration of the velocity and position. Based on that, you are figuring out the transportation mode. Based on that, you are figuring out the trip segment and so on. Okay? And then in this particular case, the filtering techniques that they use, they wind up using Rao-Blackwellized particle filtering. And the reason is, as I explained earlier. That gets us to, so this is basically passive probabilistic plan recognition, which can be either thought of as parsing given, you know, plan rules, or trying to find the most likely sequence of states and abstract states that you're going through. Now you can think of this entire thing really is the state of the agent. This is less abstract than this, and this is less abstract than this, and so on. Okay, so these are normally called hierarchical, hierarchical hidden Markov models, because the interesting thing is that the influence, if you, in terms of a, you know, directed Bayes network, the influence is abstract ones causing the less abstract ones. So these cause these. Okay, now of course you know from the Bayes networks that just because this causes this doesn't mean that if I know something about this, that doesn't change my belief about this, right? Okay, so now we'll change gears and try to see how far I can go on the decision theoretic assistance. Even if we don't complete it, please do read the paper. It's really, really neat paper. If you can read one paper which sort of bring together both the recognition aspect and the assistance aspect, you know, it's a very useful thing to read. And so the idea here in this paper is that, in fact, this is a very recent paper. This is Ichikai 2007, less than a year back. What they were trying to do is, not only will we recognize what you're doing, we will also try to help you. Okay? So the kind of picture is this. User is trying to do something on a computer. The computer basically figures out what the user is trying to do and do some of the action to get you to the next point where, again, you need to make a decision. Okay, so the idea would be, here is my initial world state, W1, user does an action, gets to W2, and suddenly the assistant realizes, that means you must be trying to do the following goal, and which will probably require you to do W3, W4, to do a bunch of actions to get through these states. So the assistant now did three actions, so got you to W5. Okay, the nice thing is you assume that all the actions that the assistant does are cheap as far as the user is concerned, unless they're wrong. If they're wrong, you'll have to yell at the assistant. But to the extent they're right, they don't cost the user anything. Anytime the user does an action, it has a cost. Okay, so then at this point, again, the user does an action, and then assistant again jumps in and realizes what it is that they might be doing, and they can do any number of actions. So the general model is set up in such a way that the assistant is trying to figure out what the goal is and do the planning. Think about it this way. All the planning that we did till now, right, the planner always knew what the goal is. And it tried to find the optimal policy for it and executed it. Okay. Now, an assistant doesn't know what your goal is. So they have to guess, based on the set of goals you might be trying to achieve, what is the most likely goal that you're trying to achieve. And very quickly figure out what must be the actions that you should do to get to that, to do that goal, and do some of them. Okay? And one of the interesting things, of course, is that at some point of time, you were, the way this model is set up, it's an online model where the assistant tries to figure out what is its most useful action to do next. Okay? And one of the most important actions an assistant must have if you want to have them as an assistant, is do nothing as one of the actions. Right? Every once in a while they should just stay. So one of the actions that the assistant might decide to do is do nothing. And when it does nothing, then what that means is the user does the next action again. Okay, it's a beautiful model. What's interesting is that he sets this whole, so here is an example scenarios. Here is like a grid game where the user is trying to go through, you know, grid, you know, don't ask me what these kind of games mean, you know more of them than me. But user is going through various places and the assistant can only do one useful action, open the door for you. Run, 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 open the door for you. Run, 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 open the door for you. Okay, and then do nothing. Okay, so assistant may not be able to do all the actions that the user can do. In fact, this paper makes a very nice point that boss may not want to have a secretary who can replace the boss. Right? You know, it's very hard to say, you know, I'm better than you, would you like to hire me as your secretary? Because then they'll say, well, you're going to replace me. So the assistant normally only has some of the actions, which of course, every action that the assistant has, the boss also has. Okay, except if the present, you know, assumption here is that opening the door is so hard for the boss that if you open it, you know, they at least don't have to do it themselves. And this is the classic example to me of radar in the MASH, right? This guy essentially is doing, I mean, the colonel still has to sign the papers. You know, this is MASH, the sitcom, where the colonel has to sign the papers. You know, radar can't sign them. You know, that would be a little too much. But he knew exactly what he might need. And, you know, after he shows this, he says, where's the pen? So he has the pen. So he gives the pen right away. So at least that will stop this guy from looking in search of pen. And it may actually be the case that, you know, if you remember that particular sitcom, this boss was stupid enough that he would probably get lost looking for the pen. Okay? So the things that the assistant does, they do it very fast. The things that the boss does, the boss can do a superset of the assistant action. Okay, so that's the setup. And the way they set this up, basically, is coupled Markov decision processes. Yes. Well, but the point is, it's computer games kind of a scenario. You know, especially in these kinds of scenarios, we move mouses in milliseconds and, you know, tens of milliseconds time frame. And the computer can do its actions much faster. You're right that it's sequential. In fact, there is at the end of the paper, in fact, in the slides too, they make an entire, you know, point about what are all the assumptions they are making. But despite all the assumptions, this is way more interesting a model where the assistant is actually actively doing planning. Okay, that I thought we should at least hear about it once. Okay. So you basically, the world dynamics is modeled as a Markov decision process because that's the most general one that you saw. And the way he does it is he assumes that there is a goal that the user has in their mind, okay? With respect to that, they decide an action, UT. It's a random variable as far as the assistant is concerned, okay? And the goal is a random variable, action is a random variable, but goals and actions are connected probabilistically, okay? And then if they do this action, then in the current, and so based, in fact, this particular, this is a, it's a Bayes network. It's actually a dynamic Bayes network. Okay, all this is saying is the user's action depends on the goal that they're trying to achieve and the current state of the world. This is just definition of the policy of MDP. An MDP policy is look at the state, do the action that you're supposed to do in that state. Okay. Now notice that this action UT depends, of course, on, so now if you think in terms of optimal Markov decision process policies, they are, one of the things that we know about them is that optimal policy for a Markov decision process essentially has a deterministic action. The action choice is deterministic for each state. Okay, but a policy could be probabilistic. All we know is there will be a deterministic optimal policy. But just as I told you, when you are recognizing my plan, you don't get to decide whether I'm optimal or not. Okay, so in this you model the user as a dunderhead who could potentially be doing, you know, optimal deterministic policy, but they may also be doing a probabilistic policy. Okay, so that basically is the probability that you do a particular action here depends upon your goal and W. Okay, if you have already computed the optimal MDP policy, this should be ones and zeros. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, if it's an optimal policy, then for a particular G, I mean for a particular U, this would be one, and every other U, it would be zero. If it's a non-degenerate distribution, that means you're allowing probabilistic policies. That means you're allowing bosses to do wrong things every once in a while, non-optimal things. Okay, but what's interesting is you need to learn the idiosyncrasies of the boss you're trying to help. That's the whole point of being a secretary. I mean, secretaries don't get to yell at the bosses saying, hey, you know, you're inoptimal. You know, the way you do that is find another job. Okay? So you need to learn the crazy idiosyncrasies of your, you know, boss. If your boss requires pencils to be on the right hand side, coffee to be on the left hand side, you do that. If your life depends on it. Okay? Anyway, and then the other thing, of course, is the agent also, basically the assistant can also do actions. Now, the next world state would depend upon the current world state, what the user did, what the assistant did. Okay? In this, basically, the only thing that is not observed by the assistant, in the model that they set up, they assume full observability on the world. Now that's, you might say that's not a reasonable assumption, just as you may have said, well, you should have allowed parallel actions. Okay? But that's the assumption they make. They assume full observability on the world. Even though the world, that means the physical world, is fully observable, it's still not a FOMDP. It's not a fully observable Markov addition process for the agent. Why? I mean, for the assistant. Why? Because they don't know the goal. Okay, because the full state is the current world state and the goal that you're trying to achieve. I know the world part of it, I don't know the goal part of it. So that's where the uncertainty comes. That's why it becomes FOMDP. Okay? Okay. So now, of course, so basically given this, what the assistant needs to try to do is they have this transition model with respect to the goals of the, if they know the goal that the user is trying to achieve, they know everything else. Okay, and so they, from that, they can actually figure out what their optimal policy is. Okay, but since the goal is not known, they figuring out optimal policy would be figuring out optimal policy for a FOMDP. Okay. Now, so this is the optimal solution according to them, and the idea is assistant is a FOMDP. Cute. Okay, I mean, the thing is, recognizer is doing planning too. Okay, it's not just recognizing and stopping. It's doing something based on that recognition. The recognition part is knowing what states we just went through. The doing part is, if these are the states that I have seen you doing, I believe then that the real state of the world. So remember, one of the most interesting things in FOMDPs is that because you'll never know which state of the world you are actually in because you can't see the exact state. Okay? But when you see, if you do enough observations, you will get more and more information about the current state. Okay, so for example, you know, the classic example is, suppose I have a little grid world of the Markov, the MDP grid world of the kind that we looked at last time. Remember, there was an obstacle here. This is -1, this is +1, and these are other things. Now, we looked at this knowing where the agent is. Suppose you don't know where the agent is. So in the beginning, the agent could be anywhere. So the distribution is uniform. Okay, there are only certain observables that you can get. For example, if you don't know anything, you can basically say, suppose the agent does, you know, five go write actions. Remember, each write action may not actually take you to right side because it's a non-deterministic world. But if you do five write actions, okay, you're more likely than not going to be stuck in this area. So in fact, irrespective of where you are, if you do five right actions, you will be in one of these three. Then you do five down actions, you will be most likely here. Okay, so you essentially using the observation, and when would you know that you are here? Because when you hit the wall, you get an observation, for example, that you know at that time that you are in that state. Okay, so anyway, PalmDP, the actions that you do wind up having two aspects. One is actually, you know, getting information about the state of the world. Okay, and the second is to go in search of the goal. So basically, in this case, first you localize yourself, and once you localize yourself, then you can try to say, you know, I can't see, but now I know. This is my example of waking up in your friend's home in the middle of the night and you're trying to look for the bathroom. So you can't see, but you know how to hit the wall, and once you hit the wall, if you follow the wall, that's a policy for getting to the door. Okay, and what happens in this particular case is that all you're trying to do is figure out the goal aspect of it, because that's the only thing that's unobservable. Okay, so hidden state is a user goal, observations are user actions and the world state. It gets the information about which action that the user did and the world state. Remember I said everything is observable except this. That means when the user does an action, it says, I'm doing this action. Or in a computer kind of a scenario, you would know enough as to which particular button they pressed. That might correspond to a particular action. Okay. So the optimal policy gives a mapping from the observation sequences to assistant actions. Because in PalmDP, basically, you'll never know what your current state is. Based on the observation sequences, you figure out what your state distribution is. And so given observation sequences, you know what the best action is. Okay? That's what you'll try to do. Normally, PalmDPs are too hard to solve. In fact, I didn't tell you the classical PalmDP solving methods at all. Because the usual way you do it, one way you do it in classical sense, is to realize that you are fully observable in the space of belief states, where a belief state is a distribution over states. But since there are infinite number of distributions, it's not a discrete MDP anymore. Okay, I didn't teach you how to do that, but what they wind up doing in this paper is essentially, just because you know how to compute an optimal policy doesn't mean you have to compute it that way. In fact, if you remember the whole MDP stuff, we ended MDP stuff with hindsight optimization, which was trying to pick an online action which would potentially be part of the optimal policy, but without actually computing, you know, without doing policy or value iteration, right? What they're doing is they're doing limited depth reasoning. In the hindsight optimization, you did reasoning over n futures of horizon H, and figured out what's the most best thing to do based on that. Okay, so there are ways of solving PalmDPs too, that way, and one of that is what this guy winds up using. Okay, so I will take 5 more minutes and then complete this, and then you, hopefully, so that you can actually have a sense of reading it when you go back, okay? If you must leave, please go. Feel free to leave. So the things that he has to do in this case is in trying to solve this assistant PalmDP approximately is, of course, figure out the state. And one way to do that is basically splits the problem. He tries to first find the goal distribution given the observation. Okay, and then once he knows the goal, he tries to goal distribution. He tries to figure out what is the optimal action using myopic. That means limited depth reasoning. Okay, and the way he does it is quite cute actually, and it talks about general, approaches for PalmDP actually. So that's why it's worth thinking about it. The goal estimation, all he basically says is that it's sort of a filtering process that's going on. The goal after the T plus 1th observation has come in. The distribution, remember this is the distribution of all the goals. There may be like 5 or 6 goals, okay? And you're trying to figure out what's the distribution over the goals. And in a degenerate case, when you know exactly which goal they're talking about, that the user is trying to do, you'd have 1 for one of them and zeros for everybody else. More normally, you would have 0.7, 0.2, 0.1, and so on, okay? What you're doing using this is as you look at the observations, you are updating your most like your distribution about the goal. This is sort of like the filtering problem that we talked about in HMM earlier. Okay? And so basically you wind up saying that the goals for which this action would be a reasonable thing to do would wind up being the goals that are more likely. Except to do this, you need this, which is what is the probability that the user would be doing a specific action given that they have this goal and this state. That's exactly the probabilistic policy that the user is trying to follow. And I said you have to learn it. They may not be optimal. If they're optimal, his idea would work. It would be a degenerate probability distribution with 1 for a specific optimal action and zeros for everybody else. If it's not optimal, then you need to figure out, you know, what are the ones that the user is going to do. The cute thing they do is that they essentially learn the user policy over experience, except they bootstrap it with the optimal policy. So remember, when you're learning, you may start by giving some values for the distribution and then you update it. Okay? So the way they do it is they set up the original distribution such that it's basically directly based on the optimal policy. Okay? And for that, so you assume that the user behaves nearly rational, and so you actually take the prior distribution to be the optimal user policy. And so you have to actually make a probabilistic distribution that corresponds to that optimal policy. And then you update it as you get observation. That's one part they do. And the other part, of course, is how do you do the action selection? Okay, if you figured out the goal distribution, you know currently, based on all the observations I've seen, I think this goal is 0.7 probability, this goal is 0.3, this goal is 0.4, 0.3, and 0.2, and so on. Okay, what he winds up doing is what the assistant has is this kind of a translation function, which depends upon the goals, the user actions, the previous world, and the assistant action. Okay, what if I know the goal? If I know the goal, then this basically can be removed, because once I know the goal, I can combine these and I know the influence directly. Okay, so then essentially I just have a much simpler process of the assistant affecting the world's transformation. But this is normal Markov addition process. So what you wind up doing is for each goal, you would actually try to say, this is the goal, and set up an MDP, compute the optimal policy, approximate policy for that. Okay? And then you combine these policies weighted by the probabilities of the goal. Okay? That's exactly what he's doing here. So this part is computed in the previous iteration. And this Q value essentially is the policy for this particular fully observable MDP. And he tries to estimate it using limited depth methods. Cute idea. You know, it combines pretty much everything you learned in the second half of the semester. Okay. So if you actually figure out all the details of this paper, you pretty much understood all the pieces that you may have that may have gone over your head. Okay. Plus, of course, he's also doing learning because for example, this previous slide, he's essentially setting up a prior distribution based on the optimal policy. I mean, imagine the whole entire MDP policy computation, which we made it sound like an entire topic by itself, becomes a sub routine for this guy now. He's just using it as a heuristic, which will then be updated. So if my boss had any sense, they would be doing this optimal policy. But I will see what my boss does and then update based on Okay, so that's what he does, and then of course he has some results. Results are less interesting to me, but the way the problem is set up, where if you look at this and say, what would it mean to just recognize? Just recognizing is knowing this. Plan recognition is just getting probability of G given the current set of observations. What would it mean to just assist if I know the goal? Just that. If I have both, combine them. Kind of a nice way of combining everything. Okay, so we'll stop here. Please do read the paper if you haven't read already, and if you read it again, because I think you'll learn lots of interesting connections. Okay, we'll stop here, and I hope to see you many, if not all of you, tomorrow, and then definitely on Wednesday and Thursday.